Chapter 9. Creature waiting to issue forth, when she should open it. The face was not averted or cast down, but looking full upon her, in its pride of youth and beauty. Some simple sense of the slightness of the barrier that interposed itself between the happy home and honored love of the fair girl, and what might be the desolation of that home and shipwreck of its dearest treasure, smote so keenly on the tender heart of Clemency, and so filled it to overflowing with sorrow and compassion, that, bursting into tears, she threw her arms round Marion's neck. "It's little that I know, my dear," apostrophe cried Clemency, "very little, but I know that this should not be. Think of what you do." "Apostrophe, I have thought of it many times," apostrophe said Marion, gently. "Once more," apostrophe urged Clemency. "Till tomorrow." Apostrophe Marion shook her head. "For Mr. Alfred's sake," apostrophe said Clemency, with homely earnestness. "Him that you used to love so dearly, once." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she hid her face, upon the instant, in her hands, repeating once. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as if it rent her heart. "Let me go out," apostrophe said Clemency, soothing her. "I'll tell him what you like. Don't cross the doorstep tonight. I'm sure no good will come of it. Oh, it was an unhappy day, when Mr. Warden was ever brought here. Think of your good father, darling of your sister." "Apostrophe, I have," apostrophe said Marion, hastily raising her head. "You don't know what I do. I must speak to him. You are the best and truest friend in all the world for what you have said to me, but I must take this step. Will you go with me, Clemency?" Apostrophe, she kissed her on her friendly face, "or shall I go alone?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, sorrowing and wondering, Clemency turned the key and opened the door. Into the dark and doubtful night that lay beyond the threshold, Marion passed quickly, holding by her hand. In the dark night he joined her, and they spoke together earnestly and long, and the hand that held so fast by Clemency's now trembled, now turned deadly cold, now clasped and closed on hers, in the strong feeling of the speech it emphasized unconsciously. When they returned, he followed to the door, and pausing there a moment, seized the other hand, and pressed it to his lips. Then, stealthily withdrew. The door was barred and locked again, and once again she stood beneath her father's roof. Not bowed down by the secret that she brought there, though so young, but with that same expression on her face for which I had no name before, and shining through her tears. Again she thanked and thanked her humble friend, and trusted to her, as she said, with confidence, implicitly. Her chamber safely reached, she fell upon her knees, and with her secret weighing on her heart, could pray. Could rise up from her prayers, so tranquil and serene, and bending over her fond sister in her slumber, look upon her face and smile so sadly, murmuring as she kissed her forehead, how that Grace had been a mother to her, ever, and she loved her as a child. Could draw the passive arm about her neck, when lying down to rest it seemed to cling there, of its own will, protectingly and tenderly even in sleep, and breathe upon the parted lips, "God bless her." Could sink into a peaceful sleep, herself, but for one dream, in which she cried out, in her innocent and touching voice, that she was quite alone, and they had all forgotten her. A month soon passes, even at its tardiest pace. The month appointed to elapse between that night and the return, was quick of foot, and went by, like a vapor. The day arrived. A raging winter day, that shook the old house, sometimes, as if it shivered in the blast. A day to make home doubly home. To give the chimney corner new delights. To shed a ruddier glow upon the faces gathered round the hearth, and draw each fireside group into a closer and more social league, against the roaring elements without. Such a wild winter day as best prepares the way for shut-out night. For curtained rooms, and cheerful looks, for music, laughter, dancing, light, and jovial entertainment. All these the doctor had in store to welcome Alfred back. They knew that he could not arrive till night, and they would make the night air ring, he said, as he approached. All his old friends should congregate about him. He should not miss a face that he had known and liked. No, they should everyone be there. So, guests were bidden, and musicians were engaged, and tables spread, and floors prepared for active feet, and bountiful provision made, of every hospitable kind. Because it was the Christmas season, and his eyes were all unused to English holly and its sturdy green, the dancing room was garlanded and hung with it, and the red berries gleamed an English welcome to him, peeping from among the leaves. It was a busy day for all of them. A busier day for none of them than Grace, who noiselessly presided everywhere, and was the cheerful mind of all the preparations. Many a time, that day as well as many a time within the fleeting month preceding it, did Clemency glance anxiously, and almost fearfully, at Marian. She saw her paler, perhaps, than usual, but there was a sweet composure on her face that made it lovelier than ever. At night when she was dressed, and wore upon her head a wreath, that Grace had proudly twined about it its mimic flowers were Alfred's favorites, as Grace remembered when she chose them that old expression, pensive, almost sorrowful, and yet so spiritual, high, unstirring, sat again upon her brow, enhanced a hundredfold. The next wreath I adjust on this fair head, will be a marriage wreath, apostrophe said Grace. Or I am no true prophet, dear. Apostrophe, her sister smiled, and held her in her arms. A moment, Grace. Don't leave me yet. Are you sure that I want nothing more? Apostrophe, apostrophe, her care was not for that. It was her sister's face she thought of, and her eyes were fixed upon it, tenderly. My art, apostrophe said Grace, can go no farther, dear girl, nor your beauty. I never saw you look so beautiful as now. Apostrophe, I never was so happy, apostrophe she returned. Eh, but there is a greater happiness in store. In such another home, as cheerful and as bright as this looks now, apostrophe said Grace, Alfred and his young wife will soon be living. Apostrophe, she smiled again. It is a happy home, Grace, in your fancy. I can see it in your eyes. I know it will be happy, dear. How glad I am to know it. Apostrophe, well, apostrophe cried the doctor, bustling in. Here we are, all ready for Alfred, eh? He can't be here until pretty late an hour or so before midnight, so there'll be plenty of time for making merry before he comes. He'll not find us with the ice unbroken. Pile up the fire here, Britain. Let it shine upon the holly till it winks again. It's a world of nonsense, puss, true lovers and all the rest of it all nonsense, but we'll be nonsensical with the rest of them, and give our true lover a mad welcome, upon my word. Apostrophe said the old doctor, looking at his daughters proudly, I'm not clear tonight, among other absurdities, but that I'm the father of two handsome girls. Apostrophe, all that one of them has ever done, or may do, dearest father to cause you pain or grief, forgive her, apostrophe said Marian, forgive her now, when her heart is full. Say that you forgive her, that you will forgive her, that she shall always share your love, and, apostrophe and the rest was not said, for her face was hidden on the old man's shoulder. Tut, 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 apostrophe said the doctor gently. Forgive. What have I to forgive? Heyday, if our true lovers come back, to flurry us like this, we must hold them at a distance. We must send expresses out to stop them short upon the road, and bring them on a mile or two a day, until we're properly prepared to meet them. Kiss me, puss. Forgive. Why, what a silly child you are. If you had vexed, and crossed me 50 times a day, instead of not at all, I'd forgive you everything, but such a supplication. Kiss me again, puss. There. Prospective and retrospective a clear score between us. Pile up the fire here. Would you freeze the people on this bleak December night? Let us be light, and warm, and merry, or I'll not forgive some of you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, so gaily the old doctor carried it. And the fire was piled up, and the lights were bright, and company arrived, and a murmuring of lively tongues began, and already there was a pleasant air of cheerful excitement stirring through all the house. More and more company came flocking in. Bright eyes sparkled upon Marian, smiling lips gave her joy of his return, sage mothers fanned themselves, and hoped she mightn't be too youthful and inconstant for the quiet round of home. Impetuous fathers fell into disgrace for too much exaltation of her beauty, daughters envied her, sons envied him, innumerable pairs of lovers profited by the occasion, all were interested, animated, and expectant. Mr. and Mrs. Cracks came arm in arm, but Mrs. Snitchey came alone. Why, what's become of him? ? Inquired the doctor. The feather of a bird of paradise in Mrs. Snitchey's turban trembled as if the bird of paradise were alive again when she said that doubtless Mr. Cracks knew. She was never told. That nasty office, said Mrs. Cracks. I wish it was burnt down, said Mrs. Snitchey. There's a little matter of business that keeps my partner rather late, said Mr. Cracks, looking uneasily about him. Oh, business. Don't tell me, said Mrs. Snitchey. We know what business means, said Mrs. Cracks. But their not knowing what it meant was perhaps the reason why Mrs. Snitchey's bird of paradise feather quivered so portentously, and why all the pendant bits on Mrs. Cracks' earrings shook like little bells. I wonder you could come away, Mr. Cracks, said his wife. Mr. Cracks is fortunate, I'm sure. Said Mrs. Snitchey. That office so engrosses him, said Mrs. Cracks. A person with an office has no business to be married at all, said Mrs. Snitchey. Then, Mrs. Snitchey said, within herself, that look of hers had pierced to Cracks' soul, and he knew it. And Mrs. Cracks observed to Cracks that his Snitcheys were deceiving him behind his back, and he would find it out when it was too late. Still, Mr. Cracks, without much heeding these remarks, looked uneasily about until his eye rested on Grace, to whom he immediately presented himself. Good evening, ma'am, said Cracks. You look charmingly. Your sister, Miss Marian, is she ? She's quite well, Mr. Cracks. Yes, is she here? Asked Cracks. Here. Don't you see her yonder? Going to dance? Said Grace. Mr. Cracks put on his spectacles to see the better, looked at her through them, for some time, coughed, and put them, with an air of satisfaction, in their sheath again, and in his pocket. Now the music struck up, and the dance commenced. The bright fire crackled and sparkled, rose and fell, as though it joined the dance itself, in right good fellowship. Sometimes, it roared as if it would make music too. Sometimes, it flashed and beamed, as if it were the eye of the old room. It winked too, sometimes, like a knowing patriarch, upon the youthful whisperers in corners. Sometimes, it sported with the holly boughs, and, shining on the leaves by fits and starts, made them look as if they were in the cold winter night again, and fluttering in the wind. Sometimes its genial humor grew obstreperous, and passed all bounds, and then it cast into the room, among the twinkling feet, with a loud burst, a shower of harmless little sparks, and in its exultation leaped and bounded, like a mad thing, up the broad old chimney. Another dance was near its close, when Mr. Snitchey touched his partner, who was looking on, upon the arm. Mr. Cracks started, as if his familiar had been a specter. Is he gone? He asked. Hush. He has been with me, said Snitchey, for 3 hours and more. He went over everything. He looked into all our arrangements for him, and was very particular indeed. The dance was finished. Marian passed close before him, as he spoke. She did not observe him, or his partner, but looked over her shoulder towards her sister in the distance, as she slowly made her way into the crowd, and passed out of their view. You see, all safe and well, apostrophe said Mr. Craggs. He didn't recur to that subject, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, not a word. Apostrophe, and is he really gone? Is he safe away? Apostrophe, he keeps to his word. He drops down the river with the tide in that shell of a boat of his, and so goes out to sea on this dark night. A daredevil he is before the wind. There's no such lonely road anywhere else. That's one thing. The tide flows, he says, an hour before midnight about this time. I'm glad it's over. Apostrophe Mr. Snitchy wiped his forehead, which looked hot and anxious. What do you think, apostrophe said Mr. Craggs, about apostrophe, hush. Apostrophe apostrophe replied his cautious partner, looking straight before him. I understand you. Don't mention names, and don't let us seem to be talking secrets. I don't know what to think, and to tell you the truth, I don't care now. It's a great relief. His self-love deceived him, I suppose. Perhaps the young lady coquetted a little. The evidence would seem to point that way. Alfred not arrived? Apostrophe, apostrophe, not yet, apostrophe said Mr. Craggs. Expected every minute. Apostrophe, good. Apostrophe Mr. Snitchy wiped his forehead again. It's a great relief. I haven't been so nervous since we've been in partnership. I intend to spend the evening now, Mr. Craggs. Apostrophe, Mrs. Craggs and Mrs. Snitchy joined them as he announced this. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.